My name is Kirsten Olson, and I teach sociology at Montgomery County Community College, which is a northwest suburb of Minneapolis.
In Minnesota.
In Minnesota, as you can tell by the way I say it, Minnesota. So I was here for 6 weeks in 2012 as a Maverick, and then 6 weeks in 2013 out in the woodlot chainsawing, which was really fun. And at the end of that time, Mark said, have you ever considered coming here in long term? I'll think about it. And then I decided that yes, that was the right answer. So we're talking about bullying on social media today. Is this something that you guys have seen unfold?
I've seen it in the news, but
I've
seen it personally.
Okay. I saw you nodding in the back. Can you?
Me?
Yeah.
I'm a therapist, and I hear about it from students, and I believe in one small town not too far from where I grew up that a young teenager did take her own life after being bullied on social media.
Right. The school district, so I work at a community college, but we are connected with the Anoka-Hennepin School District in Minnesota, and they made the national news, not for something good. They made the national news for the number of suicides that of their students, in large part by bullying related to GLBTQ+ identities. And so they made the national news, and there's all these sorts of things going on in my service area. So for those of you who weren't here on Wednesday, yesterday, what really prompted me to do this, not this today, but bystander discussions, is that the week that Trump got elected, we had 4 incidents of racial graffiti on our campus. And we had never had any. I mean, I've been working there for 12 years, and this was the first one, and there were 4 of them the first week. And so we have a lot of committees that are meeting behind the scenes, but the students don't know this. And so I said, you know, we need to get into classrooms to talk about it. So I did some surveying of students and found out that although they see harassment stuff in person, what is a much bigger deal to them is bullying on social media. So we're going to see sort of some of their responses, because I was sort of blown away by the difference in terms of how frequently they see it in person versus online. And then they also did not feel nearly confident enough to do anything online. And I think part of it is because it's a really complicated problem. And because it's really complicated, we don't talk about it because there's not an easy answer. You know, if you see this going on online, just do something else. So in the course of kind of the intro today, I'll talk about a couple of times when I saw things. And like one time I just let it go. I didn't do anything purposely. So anyways, we'll talk about all this kind of stuff in just a second. So what we're going to do today is talk about what are cyberbullying and harassment first, just so we kind of all know what they are. Then talk very briefly about to what extent it's a problem. And then I'm going to tell you about what research kind of says about effective intervention on social media. It's very different than intervention that you might see in person. Touch on research. We're going to go over some scenarios, and we're going to have some discussion as well. All right, so this is the same as yesterday if you were here, but just a couple ground rules before we start. And the first one, this is a really touchy subject. I know for young people in particular, many young people have experienced bullying online. And it brings up a lot of memories that they have, or like what they're going through right at the time. And so we all have a variety of different experiences with cyberbullying and harassment. And also, just given today's climate, the socio-political climate, a lot of us are on high alert and we get defensive right away if we hear something that maybe we did or maybe we didn't do and someone is sort of talking about it negatively, we might kind of get defensive right away. So just a reminder about that. And then also to assume the best in others, someone might say something in here, I might say something, and you would have used different words, or maybe you would have done something differently. One of the main things about bystander intervention, whether it's online or in person is that there's not a single right way to intervene because we all have different personalities and different social situations and a variety of factors. And so what might be the best thing for me might be very different from you or you. So, you know, just try to refrain from judging. And then this goes on to the next point. There's no single best way to intervene. What makes sense for you in a situation may not make sense for someone else. So we're just going to go over a couple definitions. When you hear the word cyberbullying or harassment, what are some things that you think about? Some things that come to mind?
Facebook.
Okay, Facebook.
Or Twitter. What
Twitter.
Twitter. Yeah,
yep.
24/7.
That's a huge one. And I'm going to talk about it later, but basically what we have is a situation where in the past, people have always been bullied. People have always been harassed. We are now taking it more seriously, but also people don't get a break from it, especially young people, because in the past they would go home after school and they could finally get a break from it and seek refuge in their home with their family. And now it can continue on 24/7 and spread like wildfire. So it's a big problem, yeah. Anything else that comes to mind?
Bullying. Mm-hmm. Bullying used to be a male thing, it seems like. On cyberbullying, it can be a lot more female thing, too.
Yeah. All genders are affected by this. There's a big problem, maybe not surprisingly, middle school. Girls, 6th, 7th, 8th grade is a big explosion in that time period for girls.
The word trolling comes to mind.
Trolling.
And I wonder like if you could touch on how you would define that. Is that in this realm of cyberbullying and harassment? And what is, if you could define that term for us.
Yeah, so trolling is, a troll is sort of someone who has this reputation of wanting to create conflict. So they're people who see a post and they think, aha, I can push that person's button, I can create drama. So they seek out oftentimes ways to make people uncomfortable and feel bad. And it might be directed to a certain individual, but it could be just anybody. And I have two friends, which I'll talk about later, who I don't know if they're as extreme as a troll, but they love getting into debates online, and they found each other on one of my threads. So I'll talk about that when we get there. So cyberbullying, you know, there's lots of different definitions, but these are the some that we're going to go with. Willful and repeated harm inflicted through the use of computers, cell phones, and other electronic devices. So one thing about bullying is that it's generally repeated. It's not just a one-time act, but something that happens over and over and over again. Computers, cell phones, other electronic devices. And I tell you, I'm kind of a Luddite, so I have Facebook, but I don't have Twitter, I don't do any of that stuff, Snapchat, whatever. So I have to rely on my students. And one of the things I think it's important for probably most of us to remember is how can we learn what's going on so we can support our young friends and family, because it is most likely affecting them or will. Harassment, the act or an instance of harassing or disturbing, pestering, or troubling. A bystander, one who is present but not taking part in a situation or event. So we've all been bystanders probably. And so this discussion is sort of how can we move from a passive bystander to an active bystander so that we are hopefully, fingers crossed, I mean, we really is fingers crossed, moving in a socially helpful direction. And then intervene. To interfere with the outcome as to prevent harm or improve functioning. So those are some definitions here. And in just a minute, we'll get to some more dialogue and discussion. So basics about cyberbullying, what or where does it occur? Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram, Twitter, chat rooms, text messages, cell phone videos and pictures, online gaming, anything else?
I can't. Is it? Rickrack is not right, but Yik-Yak.
I have no idea what you're talking about, but I'm sure it's right.
Well, I couldn't get the name of it to come. It is some geographically based, you're not in your head, maybe you can say this better than I am. Geographically based program or app, And so you can post things about your surroundings and they disappear, and you can post anonymously.
Okay, anonymous. So somebody
can be on our campus and be making comments about our campus or who they're seeing or what they perceive about the campus, and it goes away.
Unless someone screenshots it.
Unless somebody screenshots it.
So for people who don't have smartphones or aren't really sure what we're talking about, there's this, things like Snapchat, like, what's it, I don't have it, so it's really just me picking things up from students. Who has Snapchat? Marcus, do you want to describe kind of how Snapchat works?
Yeah. So you can take a picture, and oftentimes they have like funny overlays. Like, I could take a video of myself, and it digitally puts like a cartoon hat on my head and a party hat, right, and confetti. So you can take a video of yourself and then send it to a friend, and then you can, a picture or a video, but you can then decide how many times it can be viewed by that person, or whether or not it can be ever viewed again, or how long they have. So if it's a picture, you could send a picture to a friend for 1 second, and they'd click on it and it'd pop up just for 1 second, or it could be 10 seconds. But so it's a messaging system that goes away kind of quickly.
That's the intent, but on cell phones, we can save images that we see. And so if Marcus sent me a Snapchat and he wanted me just to see it and it was some funny thing or whatever, I could save that picture. And so Marcus thought I would just see it once, but now I've saved it and now I have some humiliating picture of Marcus or something. Yeah.
When you get that picture, does it tell you have 1 second to see it, or?
No, you just click on it and I think it pops up.
Okay. Yeah. And I was just talking with my cousin's daughter who has Snapchat, and there's something called Snap, it like maps where you are. Mm-hmm. Okay. So she said that she allows people to see her location. So she has some friends, a small friend group, where anytime she logs into Snapchat, she can see where her friends are. If they're at home, if they're at school, if they're all hanging out together without her. And you can go like incognito, but then people are wondering, why are you going incognito? And so there's like a whole nother potential layer of social isolation, you know, when people know where you are. And I was thinking, okay, what? Then someone could say, oh, there's Emily walking home alone at night at 10 o'clock. You know, so there's all sorts of layers to these things.
How about, I have a friend who tried to put together a blog, and he got such negative feedback that he just gave up on it because he felt so badly about himself.
Yeah.
He tried to do a good thing, but then the people were reading it. Wrong way. I don't know if that's included.
Yeah, it would, because in the comments section of blogs or newspaper articles, I mean, I don't read Star Tribune comments. I mean, I don't read them. I can't take it. I can't take it how people are just horrible people, and I can't take it. It's like it frames my whole idea of what people are like, and I just don't. That would be included in here, too. If people are using blogs.
Even people who publish articles in journals that have an online expression, the comment, they say the comment thing is just devastating.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and some people have been shutting down. You know, it's just like, that's not the point. The point is, I'm a writer and I'm going to write this. Yeah. And if you don't like it, go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting, I mean, where the cyberbullying and the trolling. You know, I do follow some articles and several of my congresspeople and see what people's responses are.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people out there just to poke. And I'm not even sure that they really have those opinions or not. You know, sometimes you can tell because there'll be a back and forth. But
yeah,
it's just spiraled so negatively, you know, that it's... I know whenever I'm in those situations, I don't comment on anything personal. I only comment on policy. I won't comment on a politician. I'll only talk about policy, and it's a lot harder for people to poke you over that.
But they still can, right?
They still can.
I mean, they can still twist however they want to.
And I think for a young person, that's really hard because you take it literally. That's sort of their real world,
right?
You know. Whereas those of us who grew up without it can go, "I'm done with this," and just turn it off. But it's really hard for younger people.
Yeah.
I watch my teenage kids, and it's like, yeah, we need to talk about that.
And, you know, for parents or students who choose to not be on social media, then they are socially different from others, too. So, like, there might be some mental health benefits from not being in it, but then their social
socially
circles,
isolated.
They're out, you know, they're out of it, right? Like, I never had MTV growing up, because my mom walked in once when we had a trial offer. My brother was watching some sexually explicit video, or I don't know, I don't even know, but if you say the video, people say, oh, that video from the 80s, yes, that one was the one that pressed the boundaries. Well, that was when my mom came in, and so we got rid of MTV, so I never had it, and I could never connect with people through that. All right, what does it look like? We have spreading rumors as one example, shaming people and putting them down, purposely humiliating someone, sharing private information online. You know, think about, especially for younger people, but it can happen to adults too, where you have broken up and you've shared personal information about yourself or sometimes pictures and things like that, and suddenly you broke up and it didn't go very well, and now all this stuff is out there. And impersonating someone. So, to what extent are cyberbullying and harassment a problem? This is just kind of one snippet of information. I'm actually surprised it's not higher. 28% of students, it's hard to read, 28% of students aged 10 to 18 report being cyberbullied. But 87% here, you can't read it well, but 87% have witnessed it. And a lot of people, when I'm talking with my students, I can see in their eyes that they want to do something about it. You know, that they see this stuff and they don't like it, but they don't know what to do, and maybe they've tried it before and it backfired, it exploded into something worse. And so that's one of the reasons why we don't intervene. At my school, I sent out a survey to the student population, and if you add these two together, it's over 50% see it at least weekly, which is a lot. I mean, I do not see it that frequently at all. I'm also not on it as much. And when we asked them how confident they were in intervening, they basically were not at all confident. When we asked them how confident they were intervening in person, they were much more confident. And then this is the same thing I had up yesterday for those of you who were there, but 62% of adults think that it's a major problem and 33% of minors. Basically, 95% of adults think that it is at least a major or minor problem. So this is obviously everywhere. They've heard about it. All right, so what do we know about effective intervention on social media? Great. Not much. We really don't. Part of it is because research always lags behind. Part of it is samples. So if a social scientist wants to get really good quality information, they need to have a good sample, and it's hard to get samples. People are responding to surveys less than they used to. When sociologists first started asking information via survey, they were the only ones. And so people took those surveys seriously. Now what happened is marketing took over. They took over the focus group. They took over the surveys. And so when we hear that, we think, I don't want to be involved in that. Or political parties or whatever, right? So unfortunately, that has influenced social science, and we don't get as much feedback as we want to. But there is some research out there, so I'm going to talk about what there is. We're just going to jump right in, though, and talk about it. I like that picture. It makes me smile every time I see it. All right, so first of all, there's a lot of reasons that people don't intervene, and not intervening is sometimes the best option. That doesn't mean that you can say, okay, well, I just won't intervene because it's probably the best option, but sometimes it is. So the first one is a situation is seen as ambiguous. Who can give an example of how a situation might be ambiguous? Like, you don't really know what's going on. Are they joking?
Yeah, sometimes the humor from the outside looks really bad and off color, but it may be that's part of their joking relationship. You don't always know, you know, what's okay. Without, you have to ask.
Right.
You get, and this happens on all media, is humor doesn't come across. It just doesn't. And, you know, sometimes I've made a joke in my professional past, and the other person's like, well, what do you mean? And I'm like, oh, I was joking, you know, and you just can't do it. I just learned really quickly, no, jokes have to be face-to-face. They just don't go over.
And generational things, even subcultures in the same age group, are going to be very different in how they deal with it. So you don't know. Or, you know, you only know one person, one of the people, and you don't know, you have no clue who the other people are. Absolutely no clue.
There's a whole new set of rules for communicating this way. What does it mean when you put something in all caps? Does it mean that you really like that or you really don't like it? People misinterpret the words and how they're placed. And you've got these emojis. How do they mean that emoji? So there's a whole new set of communication rules that we don't understand.
Yeah, I teach online. I teach a couple classes online every semester. And I realized that, so in my communication with my friends casually, I'll use smiley faces and stuff like that. But I feel it's kind of unprofessional to be putting smiley faces and all this kind of stuff in my communication with students. But then when I read it again, it's like, well, if I'm just reading it straight and I don't know me, I'm going to sound really mean. So now I include something at the beginning of the semester that says, like, please don't read into this, ha ha, you know. Because it is so easy to read it. And I have a coworker who uses all caps in his classes all the time to point something out. But I think it just makes him look angry. So... Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I read or heard whatever somewhere that for some, especially young girls or girls in that middle school, junior high age, and maybe older, that if their friends don't respond to something they've put on there and then have like the exclamation point on there too, that they will feel bad that that was not accepted or looked at as good as you know, maybe someone else's.
You mean like didn't get a response from them?
Well, if they have a response but it doesn't have the exclamation point attached.
Oh. Or only one exclamation point, not five.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah, man.
Or an exclamation point and not been shared.
Yeah.
Big competition to get something shared.
Yeah.
And the number of friends.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. All right, we also don't want to make things worse, right? I mean, totally valid. We don't want to draw attention to the issue. So, I mean, I'm more familiar with Facebook because that's really the only social media that I do aside from texting and stuff. And it's true that when if I see something and I post on that, a lot of my friends might see, Kirsten just posted on this thing. And so then they might go check out that thing, and there's more people now who are checking out what's going on. And some people are drawn to the drama. So some people, they're like, all right, let's see what's going on. And this is my story when I did this. I told you I had two trolling friends, or I don't know if troll is official, but they found each other. Since the election, I've really backed off on political things that I post because I think a lot of things that we post, this is my own opinion, are just to validate our friends and to make us feel like we're better instead of actually having dialogue with people about it. So I decided to kind of back off and not do that. So I found this article on the City Pages. The City Pages is a local paper in Minneapolis. It comes out once a week. It's where they talk about like shows and concerts, and they have a lot of interesting articles on local issues that the two main papers don't cover. So there was an article in there written by a man in a suburb, and he said, you know, friends who live in the city, which is me, I am coming into the city every week to hang out with you. It's a 20-minute drive. It's not that far, because if you drive from Minneapolis to St. Paul, if you drive within Minneapolis, it's almost always 20 minutes to get where you're going anyways. This guy drives in 20 minutes to hang out with his friends multiple times a month, and it is like pulling teeth to get them to go out to his house in the suburb once a year. Okay. And he was saying, you know, suburbs, there's a lot of good things in a lot of suburbs. There's parks, there's natural areas, there's, you know, old downtowns, it's not all strip malls. So I read this and I thought, that's really good for me to read this. Okay? So I posted that on Facebook. And these two people found each other. And they have completely different views on basically everything. And I knew this going into it. So they found each other. And I, instead of intervening, I don't know if I really should have or not, I don't know, but I decided, I'm just going to see what happens. Mm. Because they both get a thrill out of it, and I probably, you know, I don't want to micromanage them. I mean, they're adults, and they both like to do it. You know, I thought, well, if it was one of them attacking someone else who doesn't like that kind of stuff, it maybe would have been different. So anyways, I went to bed, and they were still going back. The NRA came up. I mean, like every single topic under the sun came up. The next morning, I got up, and I looked at it, and it was gone. Okay, the whole, not my post, but all of their interactions. So when all was said and done, one of the people most likely was embarrassed by what they said, regretted what they said, and deleted it. And in Facebook, when you delete one of your posts, all the replies underneath it are also deleted. You know, so I don't know if I should have done something different or not. I certainly would have had it been one of them and someone else. I don't know.
Do you know both of them personally?
Yes, I do know both of them personally. One of them attacks me when I post anything slightly even spiritual related. Much less religion, he attacks me.
Is this on Facebook or is it on the blog? Where's
Facebook.
Is it located?
Yeah, he's my cousin's husband.
Yeah. So that's one thing. I do actually police my own Facebook. And sometimes I'll post something out of policy and one person will jump in and another person will jump in with the opposite. Mm-hmm. And if they're having a discussion, I leave it. But the minute I see it turn negative, I nix it. Because it's my feed.
Oh, yeah.
So I kind of, and you know, people come back saying, well, why can't I, you're welcome to post that. Don't tag me.
Sure.
If you want to post that on your feed, cool.
Yep.
We're right as rain here, but don't tag me because I don't want that on my feed. That
sure.
may not be my opinion.
Yep.
So,
well, it wasn't tagged, but it was on my feed.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's one thing to consider. Again, we're not talking about kids. Again,
right.
This is kind of.
Yeah. This is a 45-year-old and a 35-year-old.
Yeah, my kids don't use Facebook. They,
yeah.
You know, my daughter uses Snapchat. My son has a feature phone, and he could care less.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting to see the difference between the teenage girl and the teenage boy.
Mm-hmm.
And bullying has always existed among women. Girls are lethal at it, and I think the internet is perfect for that because girls use words. They don't use fists. It's often underground. You don't see it. There's a really great book called Odd Girl Out. You ever heard of that book?
Is that the one by
Queen Bees and Wannabes?
Oh, yeah. Yep. There's, yep. I have not read it. Yeah.
So even as a kid, I remember bullying among girls, but it flies under the radar because they're not thumping on each other in the playground.
Yeah, relational aggression.
Right.
It's
a good point.
Yeah. And so the internet actually, you know, for boys, they're like, yeah, screw you, whatever, and they use the F-bomb, and then they duke it out, and they're more often
And then they're done.
Girls, no. It's a lot more subtle.
Mm-hmm.
And so the internet has just actually amplified all that in what I've observed.
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah, it has. It has.
Doesn't Facebook delete stuff on its own sometimes?
Well,
or is that not actually happening?
It, not on its own, and we'll get to it later, but you have to report it. And then many people usually have to report it because they can't, if there's something that gets one report, they don't have enough people to actually look at it and they have to go by policy. They can't just say, well, somebody reported it, so I'm going to hide it. You can do that, but it's usually going to be a delayed response. And unless it's something that like is going public to the world, kind of, it's going to be hard for that to work in most cases. The other thing that research shows repeatedly over and over and over again is that really sometimes the best way to intervene on social media is privately. And I have it kind of in quotes because we usually think of intervention and dealing with both parties, but oftentimes what they say is the best way to do it is to offer something to support to the victim privately, which might not really be fulfilling.
Pick up the phone,
call them, send them a message, send them a text, you know, however you are normally communicating with each other, right? You know, that you disagree with it, that you think they're beautiful, you know, whatever the thing is. All right, so I'm going to talk to you a little bit about a study that was done by some sociologists where they created a fake Facebook thread that had a bunch of negative stuff on it. And then they, and then we're not going to read through it. It will just take too long. But what they did is they divide, they, and then they asked college students, how would you respond if you logged on and you saw this going on? And it was basically, there was a person named Jordan, and the sex or the gender, some students thought it was a woman, some thought it was a man, is the person who basically said, hey, I'm super excited, it's Friday night, I'm going to go, I think she used a word phrase, get my drunk on, okay? So she's going to get wasted, and then Chris and Sam were two people, we don't know how well they knew her, right, who basically were picking on her and doing all this stuff, and it kind of spiraled. So that's the scenario, and then what the researchers did is they looked at all the responses and they put them in different categories. So supportive intervention online, that would be on the Facebook thread itself, they publicly supported Jordan. You know, you can come hang out with us, whatever. They also had supportive intervention offline, so some people said I would text, or if they lived in my dorm, I'd go over and invite Jordan to do something with me tonight. Then there was confrontational intervention, and confrontational intervention, we'll go over examples in just a minute. Sometimes, once in a while, might be effective. Again, depending on all sorts of relationships that are involved, but confrontational intervention, not surprisingly, also has a higher risk of backfiring and making things worse. And then a lot of people commented that the discussion itself didn't belong online. So here are some examples of supportive intervention online. What students said they would write publicly. Cool it, guys. Oh, by the way, this is not my writing. This is the grammar of the students who wrote them.
Okay. Can we back up and clarify? Jordan has said, I'm getting wasted tonight.
Yep, Jordan's like, woohoo, I'm going to go out and get party, you know, get drunk tonight or whatever.
And Jordan is a girl. It could be a boy. Chris and Sam also could be boys or girls. But they all knew each other, huh? So they had relationships.
Yeah, somehow. But we don't know how well they know each other. Like, if I logged on, I wouldn't, a friend's feed, I wouldn't know how well Amy knows, you know, Matt and Sam. So, like, this is it. It's so many ambiguous things you don't really know. Did you have a comment in the back?
Well, I got the impression that it was a theoretical thing that was
right.
Put on Facebook.
Yes, this is a made-up example.
Made-up thing. What about Chris and Sam? Are they real people that responded?
No, they were also fake profiles.
They were fake. Okay.
Yeah, so graduate students basically created this fake thread and gave it to undergraduates to say, okay, let's say you logged on to Facebook and you saw this.
Okay.
What are some things that you might do? Okay. So supportive intervention online. These are some examples of what they said that they would do. Cool it, guys. Relax. It's fine. Everyone's invited to the party and it'll be a good time. Can't we all just get along? Guys, let's be respectful here. We all mess up, and if Jordan said, like, she, I don't know, got sick or something one time when she was at a party, we all mess up, and if Jordan doesn't want people to know about this, then we should just drop it. My friends and I are having a movie night, Jordan. You can come if you want. Examples of supportive intervention offline. Meaning, so when they're not in quotes, it was them saying, this is what I would do, as opposed to what I would write. Okay. So it is not my place to comment. If I did, I would risk getting made fun of as well. However, I would go to Jordan and ask him to hang out with me for the night. If I saw this, I would not want to feed the fire and create more attention. I would rather text Jordan and tell her to come hang out with me if she was my friend. I would stay out of the conversation because social media is not the place for serious talks about hookup culture and girls' insecurities. But I might privately text the boys and tell them to back off. Okay, so here we have another option here. I might also reach out to Jordan with support. All right, then we have some examples of confrontational intervention. You guys are jerks, back off. Get a life. It's funny how you pick on someone to make yourself feel better about your own pathetic life. This is awful. Who are you to say these things? You have no right. You may think you are being funny. I am sure people are reading this like, wow, didn't know Jordan was like that, but wow, Sam and Chris are awful, comma, exclamation point, exclamation point. Who says those things? Yeah, she made a mistake. You are the ones who are being hated on now. I would most likely tell Chris and Sam that their behavior is exceedingly immature for the age of a college student. I would also tell Jordan to stop wasting her time with them. And then there were several people who just kind of thought the whole thing shouldn't be online. Someone said that they would write, "This conversation is very inappropriate for social media." I would tell them that they shouldn't be posting this kind of material for everyone to see. After everything, I would tell her to just delete it and let it go. And then there were quite a few students who said that they wouldn't intervene at all, which, like I said, sometimes is an okay option. Didn't want to get involved. Felt helpless and or thought commenting would cause more trouble. Some students had strong negative feelings about the topic in general. They were against alcohol, drinking, and or partying. And then they thought it was fun to participate in negative interaction. Right? So students wrote, hey, yeah, this is kind of fun and interesting. Even though it was very obvious in the thread that the two were ganging up against the other. Okay, so it was not necessarily two people who were in an argument and kind of both getting jabs in. It was two against one. It was pretty obvious that Jordan was kind of on the losing end of that. All right, so the researchers divided them into four different strategies, but this is where what you mentioned earlier, other research also talks about reporting it and deleting it. So reporting it, you can do that, and I was surprised with my students how many of them said that they'd report it. Like, to me, I thought, gee, it seems kind of like a formal thing to officially report it, and I didn't think students would do that. But I think also by them saying they're going to report it, they think, well, I did my job. I clicked report. I did what I could do. And then deleting it. So,
how do you report? I don't know that.
There are a lot of social media things where there's like a little thing in the bottom that says report, and you can report it. I don't know. I've never reported anything or had anything of mine reported. Does anyone know what happens officially? I think my understanding is that it takes several reports for them to actually look at it.
I have reported something and I can't even remember what it was.
Okay.
And I just, you know, you get a little thing back that's, well, first of all, it asks
why.
Why? Mm-hmm. So, and then it doesn't even have all of the reasons why, I think. Uh-huh. You know, there isn't, the best choice is not there. And then it just more or less says, well, your report has been
logged or something.
Whatever.
Mm-hmm. And you don't really.
And then, you know, then it probably, it gives you the option, you know, to just not see that kind of stuff, to never see anything like that kind of stuff from that particular person or mm-hmm. or place, because they're not all just single people.
But that isn't really solving a larger problem. It just means that you're not seeing it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And actually, companies like Facebook, it's a legal issue. So right. Where these reports go is they go into like a database, and when there's a certain threshold, mm-hmm. it spits it out, and they have people that look at it. And so generally things like pornography or terrorist videos, those things get jumped on very quickly, mm-hmm. And the companies will remove it, but they don't have staff to like manage every little thing.
Right.
So if you see bullying, it may not bubble up. It may not be that wide of an audience. It may not be big enough for them to get on. There was a case some years ago where there was the beheading of the guy in Syria. That was on Facebook, and one teacher in our district showed it to his kids and got canned. I mean, it was like, it's just stupid, you know, but
yeah.
That's when Facebook went, oh my God, we could get, you know, sued and put out of business if we don't do something about this. So you can't really expect the corporate entity to be able to do it at the level we're talking about. It's more like a person-to-person, how do you intervene in
what's going on. And the stat that I showed a while back about I'll just go back to it. There's the one where it asked adults how much of a problem they think it is. The second question in here is what percent say the most effective way to address the problem is, you know, is it better policies, stronger online harassment laws, peer pressure, increased focus from law enforcement? And, you know, all of this, this and this and this are all putting the responsibility on other people.
Well, they're putting responsibility on the government.
Right.
Which means they're going to put the money on us as taxpayers to raise the revenue to run these kinds of programs. I mean, so is that the most effective? We know how gridlocked Congress is.
Right. I mean,
bureaucracy, so.
The whole thing of like, hey, we as individual people can actually
we
do something about
power
it.
In this case.
But people aren't really necessarily thinking we should or we do. So I've got another scenario. So we'll do one scenario kind of in small groups, and then I'm going to have you come up with your own, like things that you maybe have seen. So we're going to review a hypothetical scenario. When you look at bystander intervention stuff, it basically they all follow the same general outline. Like the details are different, but they all follow the same outline, which is basically first you give a scenario, and then you go through a train of thought, and then you go through what you could possibly do. So that's what we're going to do. All right. We're going to have a scenario, then go through a train of thought. So things that might go through your mind as you try to assess the situation. So the good thing about social media is that you have time. So if there's something that's happening right in front of you and someone might be getting hurt or being harassed, you might not have a lot of time to respond. On social media, you do. You can take 5 minutes to think, what's the best way to do this? Which is really nice. We don't always, I mean, hopefully as adults, you know, we have learned that sometimes our first reaction is not always the best reaction. So spending some time thinking about what you could do and then kind of going through some on and offline strategies. So here is a scenario. Someone you follow on social media recently broke up with a significant other. A few weeks later, this person is tagged in an unflattering picture. His acne is flaring and they've gained weight. Someone comments, "Well, now I know why you're single again." My parents were just talking about some of their neighbors who are, I think, in their 50s, and they are estranged from his parents, and are basically estranged. And one time the grandfather said to their 13-year-old kid who had acne, when the kid came into the room, said, "What's wrong with your face?" That's a grandpa. You said that to their grandkid. Anyways, well, now we know why you're single again. Okay, so train of thought. So if you saw this, what might go through your mind? Or like what kind of questions might you ask? What information might you want to have before you decide what to do?
The relationship between the commenters.
Right. And sometimes you might be able to find out, and sometimes you might not. Okay. What else?
Sometimes waiting 5 minutes and seeing how it develops.
Okay.
Is there a back and forth?
Mm-hmm.
And from the back and forth, then can you glean, is this harassment or is this, you know, just friends giving each other crap?
Right.
I would think about the kind of resilience that the recipient of the slam has.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it seems like this kind of thing happens to the most vulnerable people.
Yes. Right.
So kind of what is my sense of their vulnerability?
Right.
You might want to look who posted the photo, if like that might, if it's the person themselves, then that just might change things a little bit, because then if it's someone else, then they might want to know and untag themselves.
Sure.
Or you could, depending on how well you know the person, you could untag them, and, you know.
Right. Anything else that you'd want to know? Okay, we've kind of already gotten into some possible interventions, so untagging them. Anything else? When I have you go over a scenario in a small group, I'm going to make you come up with 8 to 10 options, because you come up, it's easy to come up with 2 or 3, but it's hard to come up with more.
One thing my daughter's, you know, she was giving me a hypothetical situation. I was like, oh, whatever happened to so-and-so? And she said, oh, now that she's gone to college, all she posts is pictures of drinking, so we all just sort of unfriended because we don't care about seeing that. That's one one answer. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know how the person who got unfriended felt about it. I don't know if they did it. You know, you can do it quietly or not quietly.
Sure. Right.
So, you know, I'm not sure what happened with that, but I was like, we're just not interested in that. So we just drop sharing that feed. Mm-hmm. So that's one response.
And, you know, like I was saying before, there's not really a right or wrong answer because every situation, every relationship is so different. So I think what I'm going to do, just, you know, get into groups, it doesn't really matter, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, I don't care, and come up with, just as a group, either something that you have seen, something that you have heard about online, and talk a little bit about what the scenario is, and then, like I said, come up with 8 to 10. So discuss the scenario, then really talk about what are some things that might make a difference in how you approach it, assess the situation, and then think of 8 to 10 things. So the first 2 or 3 are going to come probably easily. I want you to think of more than that. Online, offline, supportive, confrontational. And then try to refrain from judgment, right? Brainstorming is getting all ideas out there because it might seem strange to you, but maybe for someone else it actually would make sense. Okay? Which group wants to go first and tell us what your group talked about? Any volunteers?
We did.
Okay, Kathy?
We kind of stayed, you know, like on, this topic. But we talked about, like, a couple that broke up and then the other person is, what was the situation? It was like
a divorce. Then, you know, posting really hurtful, negative, actually obscene things. And so this friend, because she was in a divorce case, printed it all out, took it to the lawyer and said, this is what's going on. And the lawyer said, you cannot do that or we will revoke custody of your children. And so he stopped. That's adults, but that's one intervention. You can actually, you know, print screen or actually print it to a printer or whatever you want to capture that. And, you know, that is one intervention.
The teacher would
have to do that. Yeah, I've seen two people who I hardly even know. Like, I met them once, and somehow we're Facebook friends. So go after this.
Yeah. So, and another thing which you pointed out for younger people probably would work is just sign off, you know, delete that person from your Facebook and say, I'm not going to deal with this because it's just hurting me. Why would I want to do that? Mm-hmm. But as you pointed out, that's very difficult for teenagers to make.
Yeah. Especially if they know all this stuff is happening just behind their back now.
Yes.
And now they're not seeing it. How about this group? What was your scenario?
So our scenario was a blog post where, let's say it's a private blog where it's a movie blogger. A gentleman is writing about his ideas about movies, and he's doing online movie reviews, and he writes a blog post about James Bond movie, gives it a full critique, and then you have the comments section below, right? So you have threads, and like header threads, and then you can, you know, follow the comments or you can start new ones. And let's say I hate movies, because these are always anonymous commenters. So the commenter named I Hate Movies with a Z starts attacking not the content of what they said, like not the actual review or whether they disagree or agree with the reviewer, but starts attacking the writing of the reviewer. This is maybe a trend over time.
Knowing this, the writer of the blog, and knowing that that person's fairly sensitive, I would call the blogger and say, "Don't take this personally. You know, it was a great blog. Hang in there. Keep blogging. You know, you're going to persuade people by your sheer the goodness of the writing." So that would be one way of doing a supportive intervention offline. Mm-hmm. Another thing that might, at the same time that supportive intervention, encourage the blogger to write a disclaimer at the base of his blog saying that, something to the effect that I will delete any actions that are, or any comments that are not appropriate to the an appropriate critique of the blog. So just throw it out there from the beginning. So these are a couple of supportive interventions offline. Then online, you could say, invoke the concept that keep some of these articles, some of these responses are not very civilized. Please keep the comments civil. As a critiquer, I would enjoy civil comments on this blog. You could take the point of view that the person who, this guy who hates movies, just go ahead and be confrontational. You are a jerk, and therefore you shouldn't even be writing in the first place. But be prepared in that case to, you may be supporting the blogger, but be prepared to hear more from the actual jerk.
You know, and sometimes comments like that will get a lot of likes from other people because they don't like what's going on and they don't know what to do. And so someone says something, whether it's confrontational or supportive, and you see like, I mean, more and more and more people like it because they want to do something but don't know what to do.
You could be, again, supportive intervention online would be to actually not go along, not to, follow through any comments with this I hate movies person, but put another comment in that, you know, I personally really thought this was a great blog, and then go ahead and do your own commentary, kind of snubbing that person and not even giving it credit to be responded to. So I think that's, there's a couple of others, but how's that?
Yeah, that's good, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. We have the true possibility here. If you would explain that part.
We had a middle school teacher that received kind of real derogatory comments and stuff from a bunch of people on, I think it was Facebook, and really devastating to the teacher because it was, you know, going after her, you know, she felt devastated because she was real sincere in helping students before and after school. And these students were, you know, writing things nasty about her and her reputation and really putting it out there. And I'm not sure if there was even, you know, some harmful things said about to her, threats. And so it got to be, I'm not sure how it was handled, but we came up with some possible ways of dealing with it.
I was the secretary, so I'll do the best I can, and please jump in. So one of the things that we thought about was that the person reading it maybe might want to respond in person to that teacher who received the harmful remarks on Facebook. Another thing that we thought could possibly be appropriate might be to respond to that particular student or students who had made their remarks and maybe suggested they might find a better way to, I don't know, channel their thoughts. Another thing we thought that maybe a person might want to suggest that maybe the affected parties might want to meet and have a discussion, I guess. And that a person might want to contact the administration and let them know what the person had seen on Facebook and kind of handle it, or let them handle it in their fashion. And then kind of at the last minute, we were talking over here and we said, maybe we might want to suggest they get an attorney.
Yeah.
If it was, you know, going big times, you know.
Yeah. You know, even just hearing these options makes me, you know, makes me remember different things that I've seen. And I was talking about these two trolls that I know, and one of them, maybe 3 weeks ago, commented on one of mine, on my thread. It was, I posted an article that was, I shared an article that a friend of mine who's more evangelical posted that was about, maybe some of you saw it, it was a Pathos article, and it was about how Jesus would have said Black Lives Matter and this kind of thing. And so this person, I mean, when I posted, I'm like, I bet Adam's going to say something. I bet, sure enough, he did. And then someone else commented on it, someone who I know is emotionally vulnerable. And then Adam responded again, like, oh, this is not good. It was not the two people who like to troll and are good at it. It's a troll and someone who is emotionally vulnerable. So in that case, then, I talked to Adam, you know, on Facebook, and I said, just so you know, this is a situation with this person, and you have to stop. And luckily he did.
He respected it.
He did. But I didn't know that he would, and I was going to be seeing him, you know, a few days later, and, you know, you never know how it's going to go. You don't know.
Would you also just consider unfriending
him? He's my cousin's husband.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I can't really.
I missed that part.
Yeah, I can't. Although there are two people who I have unfollowed because their posts make me like them less. Like, just what they do. And I figure I don't need to have Facebook have me feel worse about you. So I just don't. So we're still friends, but their stuff doesn't pop up on my feed. So we just have like 2 minutes. So the takeaway is just to practice identifying these, right? Supportive intervention, on, offline, confrontational, all this kind of stuff. What I think is actually most important is talking to young people to understand social media. Because, especially when they're in their lives, if you're not, and I know that you were talking about sort of how your family has sort of an open policy and, you know, that kind of thing. Because otherwise we're really going to be in the dark. Also to identify allies, so, and be an ally. So knowing who, so Kathy and I are friends. I think if I had a thing, I feel like Kathy and I could have a conversation, right? Like, I saw this thing, do you have any insight on what I should do about it? And I think Kathy would be kind and not laugh at me, and we'd have some conversation about it. And the last thing is, so the theme for the summer is beginning together. And I think it relates a lot to this bystander intervention stuff, because a lot of us are sort of beginning on this journey on how to do it, and what we need is a group of people to be supportive of each other and to have sort of grace for ourselves and for other people when we make mistakes. Like, we try to intervene and it doesn't really go like we thought it would. Or someone else tries to intervene and we think, I would never have done that. That's a horrible way to intervene. At least kind of taking steps and being aware of it and trying to come up with multiple different things and not just, oh, that looks bad. I'm going to turn off social media because I don't want to deal with it, because there might be an actual way that's supportive that will help. So that's what we've got.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, please.
You know, like how sometimes when kids are physically bullied, or, you know, a personal face-to-face bully,
right,
they don't tell their parents.
Right.
And the reason I can bring this up, because my son never told me, he was about in sixth grade, that one of the special, the EBD, emotional behavioral disability kids, had pushed my son's head in the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
Gave him the flushy or whatever it is they call that. I don't know. And my son never told me, and I was at church, a church activity. I just remember being in the kitchen, we were getting something ready or whatever. And somebody mentioned it, just kind of like, and assumed that I would know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, well, anyway, do kids keep cyberbullying away from their parents because they're afraid it'll get worse if their parents get involved, the same way they often do not want their parents to get involved?
Oftentimes.
Yeah. I think it depends on the kid, but I would say often.
Yeah. My brother was the same way. He had no idea until like 5 years ago that he was basically shoved in lockers in high school. He never told my parents because he didn't want them to intervene and do something. So.
Thank you very much for
your time.